Hi, I'm Alec.
I'm Eric.
We're the Petchy Brothers.
And this is StoryTap, where we try to tap the potential of an idea by turning it into a story.
This week's episode, Teen Titans Part 2, a sequel to last week's episode based on the 2003 animated series.
Yeah, I might not edit that part out, but since I flicked the microphone, I have to know. So the first one was Robin's movie. It was kind of all of their movie,
Yeah. But
the focus was definitely on Robin, and he was the one who like grew the most in that experience.
Yes, and I mean it's about the formation of the team.
Yes. But it was pretty superficial in regards to what I guess I'll call Teen Titans lore. And by Teen Titans lore, I just mean the 2003 animated series is basically like what all of this is going to be mostly based on. We're going to pull from the Teen Titans comics and...
You know.
No, actually, that's it. We're not going to pull from the Teen Titans other shows because I don't like them.
Fair enough. Some, you know, like... Maybe some lore occasionally that didn't get explored in the original TV show that's just sort of expansively from DC Comics as a whole. But yeah
exactly.
You know.
Yeah. So Tara.
Tara.
In the original show, Tara was Beast Boy's love interest, and she showed up out of the blue, didn't have control of her powers, and then as soon as she started trusting the group, like, it got out that like she didn't have control, so she left in a huff, and then she felt betrayed, and she came back.
Right.
And the Judas Contract happened. The Judas Contract is the storyline from the original comics. That's what the storyline is called when Tara comes through and she's like, hey, I want to join the team. Look at me, a happy-go-lucky, spunky teenager. And then she betrays everybody, sells him out to Slade. Deathstroke the Terminator. And making something based on another IP is really tricky because people are expecting certain things, but if you give them too much of what they want, you haven't made something original, you know what I mean?
Mm.
Think the Lion King remake. It's like, oh yeah, this was really pretty, but I literally just got the Lion King again. But
yeah.
If you innovate too much, then you're betraying that like nostalgia that you're kind of promising by remaking it at all. But, I mean, if it's good enough, people won't really care. So,
right. I have deep-rooted philosophical opinions that we don't really have time to get into.
Oh, dang, that would be tight, though.
Well,
we can do that at the end of the episode.
Fair enough. There's the concept of, you know, there's modernism and postmodernism, and
mm-hmm.
there's this emerging concept of metamodernism that acknowledges the like the impossibility of originality, or and then goes like, all right, but F it, we're gonna do it, we're gonna go for it anyway. And from that emerges like these oxymoronic concepts of the one that I hear the most, that I like the most, is sincere irony.
Ooh, elaborate.
Basically, just think about Inside. If you've seen Inside,
Oh my gosh. Inside
is rife with meta-modern, sincere irony kind of approach to life.
I'm so glad that the thing I love and adore has a name, therefore, you know, making it legitimate.
Yeah. Spider-Verse, I think there is something inherently meta-modern about that.
Oh, yeah.
Spider-Verse seeks to be, I don't know, acknowledges... Spider-Verse is like deeply rooted in that because it's a multiverse idea kind of show about just the infinity of everything and how expansive. And, you know, if you sort of take the Rick and Morty approach to that reality, the universe is so big that nothing in it matters.
Yeah.
As opposed to something like Spider-Verse that embraces the size of it.
Mm.
And not
infinite space, but infinite possibility.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
There you go.
I can't believe I just thought of that.
That was
off
great.
The cuff.
That was really great.
Thank you.
Which also leads me to think we should see Everything Everywhere all at once.
Yeah. Is that a Marvel movie?
No.
Okay, because...
Sorry, but it's a multiverse movie.
Yeah, because I saw multiple things talking about it, but like framing it, comparing it to other Marvel IPs. Not like saying, here's how it's kind of like a Marvel movie, but like saying... Everything Everywhere All at Once, Venom, and Spider-Man. And I was like, what? I guess. And then I saw some other completely different article that was like Everything Everywhere All at Once, Spider-Verse, and Iron Man. And I was like, I guess this is like Marvel owns the studio or someone something. Who made this.
I mean, there's the Sony connection.
Really?
Maybe. I mean, Sony is... I don't know. I think Sony was the distributor for Everything Everywhere, but...
Okay, maybe that was... Okay.
And it's also got Michelle Yao, who was in Shang-Chi.
Ah, cool.
And a bunch of other stuff. Right. Like, I've heard somebody describe... Michelle Yao is like truffles. I don't really know anything about it, but when I find out it's in something, I'm like, oh, that's cool. I should try that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I do love truffles. So... To walk that fine line of innovation and paying homage. I don't know if it's paying homage if you're just reusing it. Oh my gosh, maybe that's the difference. People are just borrowing and stealing from the original when they should be doing something that's like paying homage.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. All right, we're done.
Yeah, you got the same ingredients. You had a new recipe.
There you go.
You add something. You cook it hotter or whatever.
And so, walking that fine line... Basically, innovating is very difficult because you want to add something new or change something without betraying the original, which is why I think that Red X from the 2003 series should make a comeback, but instead of him being Robin as like the twist reveal, here we go, I texted you, so this isn't really a reveal, but for the audience, it's a reveal.
It's a reveal.
I think Red X should be Terra in the second movie.
Right.
Because what Red X is basically, I want to get what I want and what I kind of think is best for everyone else, but I'm going to do it by betraying those close to me. I'm betraying their trust.
Right.
So I think Terra, it should still be the Judas contract, whatever story we end up going with. Terra helps Slade achieve some sort of goal that is bad.
Bad.
But along the way, she does become friends with either just Beast Boy or all the Teen Titans, and she uses Red X as this, like, secret identity to save them. And, you know, when that is revealed, when they find out, she's like, hey, it's me. It's okay. You can calm down now. You're welcome. And they're, like, fuming. And, you know, they're like, we don't care about getting out, saving our own skins. We want to save the day. And she... You know, at first might feel betrayed, like, hey, I said you're welcome. Like, I saved you. You should be thanking me. And then she has that sort of realization. And maybe she sacrifices herself in the end, like last time.
Like last time. Oh,
that was so sad.
I'm still sad.
It was heartbreaking. So, where we ended things in the last movie was the team has formed. They build the tower. They build the cool T-shaped tower outside of, air quotes, the city. Jump City.
Jump City, yeah.
And the team is a unit, and all we really get outside of that, you know, here's who we are. We're trying to just enforce some sort of nebulous justice, either in the city around us or across the world. I think we should mostly stick to just the city for now.
Yeah.
We don't want to get too big too fast. And the post-credit scene, or the mid-credit scene of the first movie, is Slade, who was the coolest big bad of the original series in 2003.
Right.
He's just there, and he says something really, you know, vague, but very cool, and you're like, oh my gosh, it's him, and he's voiced by Ron Perlman, because nobody else can.
No, nobody else. It'll be a James Earl Jones as Darth Vader situation.
Yeah. Ooh.
I don't hate that. I actually really like that, yeah.
So, this new movie... Part two, and I think just naming movies part one for the sake of, like, just letting you know we're planning a sequel off the bat is really underrated. So, I'm going to name that other episode. It's not released yet, but I'm going to name it Teen Titans Part One.
Yeah.
And this will be Teen Titans Part Two.
Okay, so, sort of the idea here, having this second movie... revolve around Beast Boy.
Yes.
And I still want to do all the other ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. or at least revolve more around Beast Boy. The first one kind of revolves around Robin, and now the second one kind of revolves around Beast Boy. What is the idea there?
Since we already have established characters, basically we should just zero in more on what do each of the, you know, leading roles, probably Beast Boy, Terra, and Slade, what do they all want? But also, from a more macro kind of scale, plot point and development-wise, what kind of growth or change or statement do we want to make? What kind of change do we want to see? What statement do we want to make? What theme do we want to be at the heart of this movie? And just spitballing ideas, establishing Beast Boy's whole character in the first movie was he was very vain, but we didn't really judge him for that. He really commodified his superheroism, but we never said that's a bad thing. You know, normally commodifying anything, eventually you make the statement of parasocial relationships are bad, or, you know, you can't live as a persona in the public eye. You do need to have a private life to a degree. Do we want to go with something like that? Do we want to have a theme that has nothing really to do with Beast Boy being a public eye persona kind of thing?
I don't know. I think that that is sort of... maybe it should kind of be formed in opposition to the betrayal.
Elaborate? Formed in opposition to the betrayal?
I don't know.
I kind of hear what you mean. Yeah, but...
I mean, it should exist as, I don't know, maybe, like, what Beast Boy kind of has to figure out or do is, I mean, what's the opposite of being betrayed, or what's his reaction to being betrayed? What is he looking for? I mean, the idea here is that in the original series, Beast Boy is the most affected by Terra's betrayal because they were a couple.
They were romantically involved.
Yeah.
There we go. Why did I rephrase it?
I was going to say lovers. So, like, that's the worst way to describe anything ever. Yeah.
They were teenagers, and I understand being cartoon characters, they have this weird agelessness and timelessness to them. Because when you're like 5 and when you're like 15 watching the show, you're like, yeah, they're a couple, whatever. And even as an adult, you're like, oh yeah, this is like a teenager puppy love kind of thing. But them being ageless sort of gives it this really blanket applicability to all, air quotes, relationships. Yeah. I don't know why I went on that tangent. It's basically to asking people, please don't be weird.
Because we're wise.
And the show is called Teen Titans. Oh dear. So... it could be, we could try and strike at something that I have not really ever seen before that I can recall of, you know, all shows eventually that grapple with rom-coms, sitcoms, all of that, eventually grapple with the idea of having it all, of, you know, having a significant other you spend enough time with, starting a family, whatever your definition of a family might be, while also going through a successful and fulfilling career, balancing that vanity and fulfillment kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I've never seen it done with someone young, you know, like a child actor type of movie trying to balance that.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be really nuanced and hard to handle because... like, who knows what it's like to be a kid if you're not a kid?
Yeah.
But nowadays, kids, teenagers, feel this sort of pressure to start a career or a brand as soon as possible.
Yeah.
And that could be something really profound.
Yeah, actually, I think you're...
like a 15, 16-year-old Beast Boy feeling like he has to choose between his career and his love life.
Yeah.
I think that's something, now that I'm kind of getting into it, that is something that could only be done with cartoon characters. Because if I see a 15, 16-year-old on screen wondering, like, oh, do I go for the Grammy or do I go for my future wife? I would be like, calm down, go back to bed, go back to driver's ed.
Yeah.
But as a cartoon character, there is that agelessness that can make you think like, yeah, whoa, it is hard to, air quotes, have it all. And oh my gosh, he's only like 15. He's only 16-ish.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I definitely felt that at that age. I was like, oh man, got to get started now. I got to, you know, get started. Well, I have to decide like right now in between PE and, you know, Halo Night with the boys. I have to decide. Med school? Film school? Freelancing? Do I want to travel the world? Take a gap year? I have to decide right now. I think that would be really dope.
Yeah. All right. I like this.
That's all right. Cool. So that's the sort of theme we want to go for. What is the statement we want to make about it? And it doesn't have to be a hard set statement. It could just be a little nebulous. More... We don't, but not so judgy so much as a final statement, like, oh, Beast Boy made the right or wrong call with whatever he did. Do we want to make a statement that is more, don't feel like you need to decide so young, don't feel like you need to commit to one thing wholeheartedly because you might burn out, or should we just go all in and say, like, fame is fleeting? Settled out, have a family. That's weird.
That's super weird.
That's really weird.
Isn't part of the whole point of this that he is betrayed?
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
It could be something about... Oh my gosh. Okay. There does need to be a sort of older wisdom there. If... I mean, being 15, 16, he is, air quotes, a young teen, young adult, child, whatever age range. So him being betrayed by the first person he has been, like, seriously in love with could broach something about swearing off, you know, a significant other, like, I'm destined to be alone. And then an older character, maybe Cyborg, maybe someone from the Justice League comes through, or Mento from his old team,
right,
comes through and is like, calm down, go back to bed, go back to driver's ed. But in a very more mature way than that, saying, right, like, bro, you just gotta keep on going out and living life. You know what I mean? Highs and lows. I'm reading Will Smith's biography right now. Mm. I started reading before he slapped Chris Rock.
Ah.
Everybody shut up.
Okay.
I'm reading that, and basically he's talking about how life is learning. Basically, the only way to not live life is to give up and say either, I don't want to learn anymore, or I know everything. Those are like the only wrong ways to... Those are the only like wrong mindsets to have.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. We are dealing with very mature, large-scale themes right now, but we haven't come up with a single plot point.
All right. Well, we start. All right. Well, starting the movie, the Teen Titans are solving problems. The city is still kind of a mess, and it's still where sidekicks go to blow off steam and then run back to their comfortable positions as with more established heroes. But the Teen Titans have sort of emerged as a dominant force in Jump City. And as such, they're getting a lot of recognition. It's like, you know, they get free pizza and things like that.
This is pretty cool.
And, like, all of them, nobody's got any complaints about it, but Beast Boy loves it.
Yes.
Beast Boy is, like, accepts little endorsements and stuff and, like,
he's, like, kissing the brand manager for the Teen Titans.
Yeah.
This is fun.
And, you know, they say those throwaway exposition lines to him.
Yeah.
They're like, look, I don't mind free pizza and stuff, but I can't help but feel you're making it this a little too much about online presence.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I'm sort of zeroing in on not our first plot point chronologically, but, you know, the first one I've thought of. I really like the idea of him thinking he's got it all figured out. Like, this is the way the world works, you know, get online or get out of the way, old man, kind of thing. And then Terra comes through and sort of, like, derails all of his preconceived notions about like what he wants on like a grander, in the grand scheme of things. So, Act One, the Teen Titans are establishing themselves as the, not authority, but protective force of Jump City. New heroes are still coming in to punch their feelings out, but they're there to like help the Teen Titans, and the Teen Titans are, you know, the five people who teach them lessons about like, hey, that was really great form and all of this and that, but a little too much property damage. Watch that next time. Now, you know, go on home to Green Lantern or whoever.
Yeah.
And then like they've really got it down. And Beast Boy is not so much about teaching the sidekicks stuff as he is about boosting the brand.
Right.
And so he's got Robin made him some drones that capture really good footage of fight scenes and stuff. And he's like taking selfies the whole fight and this and that. We have one scene or two where, you know, new sidekick rolls in. They teach him a lesson and then he's, you know, cut to them like shaking hands and being like, go home to Green Lantern. I'm like, and he's like, oh, thank you so much for teaching me all these very valuable lessons about being a hero. Okay, bye. Where's Beast Boy? And he's like talking to a suit about advertising deal or something. Beast Boy's back editing his footage at the Hype House. I mean the tower. And then they're like, all right, let's go do another one. There's a new sidekick in town who needs help doing something, it looks like. And like, she's in the moment of action. We gotta go now. Okay, let's go. Blah, blah, blah. They roll up and as they say in Hotel Transylvania, Beast Boy lays eyes on her and zings. He is just like, you know, he's like setting up the drones. And basically what I'm getting at was the drones are there to capture footage while he is too distracted to capture footage himself. But they like go through the footage and they're like, ooh, you have feelings. And he's like, no, I don't. Shut up. So,
no, I don't. I'm vapid.
And so they have that footage. Beast Boy's going through it and he's like, gets her name. Oh, it's Tara. I'm digging her. Looking for a social media presence. She has none.
Yep.
He does not know what to do. She literally is all about van life and he like living in dirt. And he does not understand how you can do that without asking for like validation. Like, yeah, you've lived van life, but like, why, if not to promote things and have the aesthetic to show off on social media? She's like, I don't know, I just like dirt. And she eats dirt. No, I'm kidding. But she, and, okay. So that is Beast Boy's, not quite his call to action, but his crossing over into a threshold of something new emotionally and all of that.
Right.
And we would have to get started with a really weird placed montage establishing Tara as, oh wait, no, that could be the majority of the story. Like when they're sort of shooting the breeze and then they're wondering, like, you know, Tara, like, she's learning a lot and she's really cool. When is she going home? And so that, oh my gosh, dude, we're on a roll already.
Yeah.
Tara doesn't have a home to go back to.
Yeah.
She's just rolled up because she saw some trouble and she wants to stop it. And then they ask, like, okay, who's your, like, hero? Who are you sidekick to? And she's like, what? She's like, no, I just do good. I roll around.
Van life.
And then they can't quite get her to open up. And then Beast Boy does. And she's, like, really upset. And she's like, yo, I live alone. What we're slowly zeroing in on is Tara. Maybe we should make her a member of the Teen Titans.
Right.
And as you know, the second we do, she betrays everybody. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Dang, this is going to be sad. That was a violin. I don't know what that was. I just watched an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm where he does the violin bit.
Okay, so
Michael J. Fox was there.
Oh, cool. So, we do that. Tara's a member of the Teen Titans. Yay! Confetti, spaghetti, it's a parade. Deletti. That's
yippee.
Not like, yippee. I think that, okay, I think that there should be kind of this undercurrent running through the whole time you know, from the get-go, all of these threats that they have been stopping kind of have this uniting thing. It's like it's all people from the former Hive Academy mm-hmm. or robots Ooh. That look the same. You know, those Slade robots.
Yeah, the Slade robots. The Slade from the show. Robots. Oh my gosh.
Very.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So we do that. And then, you know, everybody else is sort of trying to unite, understand this mystery. And, you know, in the beginning, Beast Boy is like, it's like, whoa, the mystery. Anybody who can come forward with more information.
Hashtag about... robot something or other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk to somebody who understands that culture and is funny to write those jokes. It takes a village, kids.
We are neither. Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Go on.
Just so that we can kind of launch directly into Slade.
Yeah.
As a present. Like, Slade already being a presence without us seeing him.
Yeah. Okay. We're almost halfway through. We really need to decide, what does Slade want? What is his plan? What is this villainous thing that he's trying to do?
He's trying to find KFC's secret herbs and spices.
Not again.
He wants to take over the city. Yeah, kind of low-key. Probably do that by running for public office.
Yeah, I mean, what made Slade really cool in the original 2003 series was he had this sort of obsession with getting Robin to be his apprentice to work for him. And we never really figured out what his grander scheme was beyond that.
Yeah.
Because it was cool enough by itself. Yeah. He was like, I want you to beat up your friends. And yeah. He was like, and he got it. He did it. He did it for a while.
Well, I mean, really like, cool. And the second thing is that he makes Tara his apprentice.
Right.
But then it's like in... And then he takes over the city.
He just takes over the city?
Yeah.
Alright.
Like, in a weird little totalitarian city-state?
I really want Slade to be the end-all, be-all villain. Just because he was my favorite when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So for him to just want to take over the city or to beat the Teen Titans seems like so small scale that it's my bias telling me this, but I do feel like he's being wasted by just wanting something so superficial.
Fair enough. I think that, well then, I think that his goal is specifically to eradicate them because he already controls all of this. Mm. Like he was... Like, he, sort of the idea is that they have come to be a legitimate threat.
Hmm.
You know, he low-key controls all the crime, and now they represent a united front against him. And then he's like, okay, can't have that.
Interesting. Okay, so basically what he wants is to destroy the Teen Titans?
Yes. Okay. After saying, and I think that like there's sort of an opportunity here to be like, well, at first I thought you might actually be useful to me. After all, you got Brother Blood out of the way, which gave me ample opportunity to obtain a much larger market share.
Yeah. Okay. This is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Them teaching heroes valuable lessons and like sending them on their way is kind of a thorn in his side.
Yep.
But what's really the problem is that they are staying, and yep. they are making themselves like the protectors of this city that was kind of a joke in the first movie.
Yeah.
So, he's just like the secret crime boss behind the scenes, yep. I guess.
Yeah.
And, okay. Okay, yeah. That's pretty cool. He's got this secret underground operation going on, and he's been planning to make, like, this world, some bigger moves.
Yep.
So he's been looking the other way, he's letting the Titans get away with stuff, and then he's like, alright, time to mark them. Send in my super secret agent, / apprentice, Tara.
Yes.
And Tara...
Dirt Girl.
Code name Dirt Girl. And Tara, beginning to form
That's the name of the episode. Teen Titans Part 2, codename Dirt Girl.
Dirt Girl, oh goodness. Man. Okay, quick tangent. When I come up with, like, code names for things, I like them being, like, cheeky. And, like, the whole purpose of a code name is so that people don't know what it is. But, like, I make mine, like, cheeky. Like, oh, you might understand. That would be the most obvious, stupid code name if you were trying to keep this project a secret. Oh, my gosh. Anyway.
Gosh. You will call. You can call me Velvet Thunder.
Oh, man. The Petchy Brothers are working on a secret project. Could it be a sequel to Teen Titans? Oh, it's codenamed One Eye and Dirt Girl.
Yes.
Wonder what it's about. Okay. So.
Surprise. It's actually the Brotherhood of Evil arc.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Send in Dirt Girl. And Terra having formed these genuine friendships with these five sidekick heroes, she utilizes this fake, this alter ego of Red X, maybe to, how does Red X prevent the Teen Titans from falling prey to Slade's plan? Terra's adopting the Red X persona. How does that result in the Teen Titans being safe from whatever Slade has planned to destroy them? Oh, I do have an idea.
Oh, but... well, yeah, here's something that I'm thinking of spontaneously, and we definitely didn't have a break to go to the bathroom that you edited out.
Yeah.
So I think that I think that it kind of just makes sense to have Terra establish Red X. It's like, just, she runs through the shadows a couple of times. She does a couple of things. We get a couple of, like, classic sound bites. Red X works alone.
Oh, gosh.
Which is awesome. Cool. Yeah. Red X was just such an awesome thing. Does that come from anywhere besides the show?
No.
Amazing.
Literally, the only instance of Red X was the 2000... Sorry, I ate some cookies and... I got that dust in my throat. The only instance of Red X is in the 2003 Teen Titans show, until just like a year or two ago, the new Teen Titans comic books got the, you know, the five together on the team. And then they start like the Teen Titans Academy, and then Red X is like... mentioned with exposition, and then they talk about him, and then he shows up and he's like, oh, who could he be? And then it's resolved in like 2 weeks.
No.
Yeah, it was pretty lame.
Was it Jason Todd?
No, it was some guy. It was some guy from some other storyline that they needed to wrap up. They basically threw him away. They also revealed what was in Robin's briefcase.
Oh.
It was like a time turner type of thing.
I thought it was gonna be like the Flying Grayson's uniform. Anyway,
whatever.
Or some Zenothium.
Yeah, we can just, you know, that was only a comic book. Who cares about those?
We can
override them.
Yeah, movies are the only thing that matters now.
I'm thinking Red X can, rather than making Red X, basically Terra invents him from nothing on the spot. And she uses him as, since she has this insider information from the Teen Titans,
right,
she starts laying these clues about, for the Teen Titans to realize, Red X is not your average run-of-the-mill bad guy that we have been using as training dummies for the sidekicks coming through Jump City. He is a big bad. He knows what he's doing, and he could kill somebody. He is a big threat. We're not going to post about him on social media, Beast Boy. We're going to keep this super hush. And we're going to stop him ourselves, no one else involved, so that Terra can lure them in somewhere and basically lock them in with combat with, air quotes, Red X. And that's when Slade sort of like pulls off some big stunt, and then there's an explosion, and the Teen Titans tower literally comes down. And then she's like, congratulations, Slade thinks you're dead. You can all go off and do your own thing now. And that's like the unmasking, and they all feel very betrayed. And then she thinks, no, this was the right call. Slade is such a bad dude that, like, the only way to win is to hide.
Yeah.
The only form of winning is surviving.
Yeah, and I knew you weren't going to join up.
There you go. Oh my gosh. So... Yeah.
So, I mean, how can we recenter? Okay, one, how do we come back from that? And two, how does that continue to revolve around Beast Boy?
It could, I mean, Terra could, okay, Han Solo, Terra runs away, and we think she's gone. Basically, they see her as a villain now, since she just helped.
She is.
She was, yeah. Yeah. So she runs away, and basically, she realizes she can't change their mind, and then they're like, you are a villain, we're coming after you. It could be either, you're a villain and we're coming after you, and then she runs away, or they're like, you need to help us beat Slade, and she's like, I can't change your minds, then I'm just gonna leave. I think it should be a little more... I think we could have both. We could have the four of them, Teen Titans minus Beast Boy, all the four of them thinking, Terra, you were clearly manipulated by a very bad dude. We want to help you, rehab and be a good guy. And Beast Boy is just livid because he just feels too betrayed. So he is like, you're a bad guy. We stop people like you. We hurt people like you. And so he wants to fight. He wants to hurt her. And she is very sad. It's very sad. It's very emotional on both fronts. Yeah. And then she just runs away and then goes van life on the road again. And that's that leaves ample opportunity for Beast Boy to have a very dark night of the soul moment. Yeah. And then be brought out of it by either his friends or
a sad boy, and then he's a bad boy, and then he's a redeemed boy.
He said, see you later, boy. She was a mud girl. No, wait, she was a dirt girl. He was a social media influencer boy. She said,
could turn into animals.
She said, okay.
All right. The cadence is hard to work out. Yeah. Anyway.
So, Slade, thinking he defeated the Teen Titans, he needs to be at his most vulnerable there. About to do something to take over the city.
Right. He did stuff like that now and again on the show. He had those giant digging worms that one time. Where did he get that money? Where did he get the funding for this?
Probably freelancing as an assassin.
Yeah.
Deathstroke the Terminator.
Deathstroke. All right, yeah. I feel like there's maybe a throwaway line, like if they ever turn up information on Slade, it's like Slade Wilson, international mercenary known professionally as Deathstroke.
I do like
I like the idea of like Slade is finally going into business for himself. He's gone from hired gun to big bad.
I like the more of a ghost approach of no one knows who this guy is. Like, in the show, if you didn't know who Slade was from the comic books, you had zero idea what he was or where he was from or what his deal was.
And since it was made for, like, a bunch of 8 to 13-year-olds, none of us knew the history of Deathstroke. So, we were going in blind, and it was the coolest villain ever. He had this, like...
He had a mask that literally covered one of his eyes, bro.
Yeah, this minimalist, techno gear, clock gear aesthetic.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So do you think, that could be what he's doing, but without any sort of explanation.
Yep.
You know, so he just says some very, without context, basically, you don't get the context for him saying, like, I'm finally going into business for myself. Yeah. But if you've read the comics and you know who Deathstroke is, then you're like, he made his money murdering people, and now he's going to, like, launch this big thing.
Yep, now he's in management. So what is his plan? Is he going to burn half of the city's faces off? No.
I mean,
he can't just, he can't just do crime. He's already been doing crime.
Yes.
Let's bring back the classic. Like, most people don't know this, but there is a dormant supervolcano under the city.
Okay.
No, that's nothing.
Okay.
Because that would just be destroying stuff.
Yeah.
Which is fun, but all right. I mean, like, he could just hold the city hostage, but that's a one-off.
Passé.
That doesn't change the dynamic. So how does he, like...
It's very tricky to come up with something compelling without being redeemable as a villain, you know, but also something that can be shut down without, while also leaving room for him to come back in a later movie or show or spinoff or something.
Right. Well, I mean, in the show, Trigon brings him back from the dead.
Truth. Oh my gosh. Okay, so Slade needs to die.
Yeah.
Right? Same way.
In a volcano.
Terra brings him down. Does Terra die again in the end? Because that is like the Judas contract. She redeems herself by making the ultimate sacrifice and bringing down the bad guy who she like helped bring up.
I don't know. I kind of like that. I kind of like what that says thematically.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, it's not... Well, it goes from this mentality of, like, I need to... I'm looking out for myself, and has the same message as the same... of the as the original series, which is, like, one of Terra's last line, I think, is, there's always hope.
Oh, goodness. This is hitting very close to home.
Yep.
All of this. All
I have to rewatch the show. It's been a while.
Oh my gosh. I rewatched a lot of it and it really holds up. It's so good. So, I mean, we can just make it like a nebulous... okay. We got to decide on something. It doesn't have to be perfect. Does Slade want to just destroy the city as a means to an end? Or does he want... Does he specifically want the city, like, that is his end, to take over the city for something? Or is there, like, a dormant supervolcano under the city that will power his facilities for the next 1,000 years?
Something? Yeah, geothermal, like, the geothermal eruption will do this, that, and the other, allowing the shell corporations I own to become a new energy superpower.
That's like, just it.
You'll kill millions, probably.
Exactly. Okay, there we go. We kind of got it.
Yeah. We got enough for this.
He doesn't stop to explain, like all the other B-list supervillains that we use as training dummies. He's like, I don't owe you an explanation. You are not my grand adversary. You are a thorn in my side. I am so sick of the Teen Titans coming back and being like, you know, this 5-cent balance that doesn't match on my balance sheet. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's just like so cold and calculating the whole time. And he's like, you see, there's a dormant volcano under here that will power something that I, you know, will leave nebulous because I don't owe anyone an explanation. And then they come back. And that is when he goes from cold and calculating to just losing it. And he is letting loose. And they are getting the first glimpse of the A-list supervillain and just how dangerous he can be. And so Beast Boy comes through and starts helping out, and he's like, okay, now that Beast Boy has gotten through his trauma, it is now a stalemate. We aren't winning. You know, super volcano thing is falling apart. Oh no, it's all going wrong. Terra comes through and does the whole sacrifice bit. Like, Slade falls in some lava, and she turns to stone, I guess, just like in the show. Why not? And
it's that, or she just leaves to van life. I feel like the alternative is that they all survive this and Beast Boy cannot forgive her.
That's a lot. That's very different than what I was imagining. I like it.
It's an option we have.
Yeah. rather than wrapping it up all nice in a nice little bow and Terra being like forcefully taken out of the equation, instead it's like, no, that's not okay.
Yeah.
You just can't forgive her.
Oh no, my gosh. I mean, that's sort of a thing. So she drives off van life and...
Yeah.
I mean, that really... To me, that kind of keeps with this new idea of what animated media seeks to do and sort of portraying these young people in a way that's a lot truer to life, is that growing up, especially at like the age they are, is actually really messy and lacks closure.
Yeah. Oof. That's a lot better. I dig that.
Hooray!
Yeah.
Alright, so it's like it's out this and you think it's gonna be happily ever after, and Beast Boy says it's like I can't forgive you.
Oof. And then, you know, you can't live under the same roof. She's gonna go van life and maybe they can be like, hey, see you around. What, you're not gonna beat me up because you don't hurt people like me? And he's like, shut up, go away. That didn't quite strike the tone. But okay. So we've got the ending, essentially. There needs to be another, maybe a B plot going on. We didn't explore Red X very much. We didn't explore any of the other Teen Titans.
They are also there.
Yeah, exactly. Thinks.
Raven floats some rocks and is moody. Starfire uses the way too much.
Right. But what is missing most of all is Beast Boy's Dark Night of the Soul, him being so betrayed by the first person he's had these feelings for. It needs to be punctuated? Accentuated, maybe? Is the B plot essentially coming to a fruition? Maybe that's Robin and Cyborg. Maybe Raven.
Uh-huh.
That would be really good. Raven being the moody, isolationist kind of character she is, essentially being the polar opposite of Beast Boy. That could be really good for her to have a heart-to-heart when Beast Boy is, like, you know, feeling down and out. She could have something else going on that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's actually, like, I feel like everyone else kind of makes sense and kind of fits. And Raven, as we sort of established in the first movie, is basically helping people in part to punish herself.
Right.
And so she doesn't want to allow herself to be part of this team. She doesn't want to be close to these people. And then she kind of like finally caves to that.
Yeah.
With Beast Boy, because I think that sort of makes sense because it reflects what she's afraid of, the experience that Beast Boy has, that he's let himself be vulnerable and it's only led him to more pain.
Oof, oof. Ah, gosh, this is really deep.
And Cyborg says booyah.
And Cyborg says booyah and Starfire is silly.
Yeah. She drinks mustard. That's so funny.
That's so weird. Wacky. So, I suppose Raven can be the sort of deuteragonist on the other side of the main story. And whenever we split off into teams, Beast Boy is basically just saying, I'll go with Terra, y'all go do your own thing. And at first it's like he's being flirtatious and trying to like woo her or whatever. And then after a while he realizes like my, you know, overt funny guy persona isn't quite landing. I'll just be myself. Uh-huh. But what part of, basically he tries to treat her like a, you know, fan rather than someone he wants to spend time with.
Right. Okay.
And then over time, and then the B plot that goes on while they split off into teams or whatever will be Raven bad mouthing Beast Boy and talking about how, like, Robin will be like, I think Beast Boy is fine and I'm not a fan of how the priority he puts on branding the team or whatever. And Cyborg is like, I actually really like the branding. Starfire is like, I think he's funny, and I'm glad he's boosting the morale of the team. And then Raven is like, I kind of think he's pointless. And they'll have one, two, or three conversations. And then basically Raven will ultimately realize, like, without Beast Boy, like, the rest of the team would just not have the heart to fight crime. Like, he brings this levity to everything that you know, like the Flash in the Justice League.
Yeah. When the Flash dies in an alternate timeline, the world is destroyed.
Exactly. Without the Flash, like, the Justice League falls apart because he's, like, the witty one. He keeps things lighthearted, which is essentially, he brings hope to everybody. And so Beast Boy is, like, essentially the same as that. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah. Yes, I do.
That's pretty spot on. This was...
He's hilarious.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
So, I think that's pretty much everything we have.
Cool.
That's all we really need.
Yeah, it is.
The sort of midpoint, after the midpoint, leading up to the climax is the betrayal. The midpoint is what you... We treat it sort of like Dark Knight style. You think the midpoint is like the climax, but it's really just the climax of the first movie you're watching, because you're kind of watching two in one. First one is going after Red X, the second one is going after Slade. The midpoint is, oh, we're going to have this final showdown with Red X. Leading up to the climax is the unmasking. Terra is Red X. The climax is, let's all go face Slade. Beast Boy, we need you here. Oh my gosh, and that's exactly it. Everybody's fighting him and being all serious, and Slade is like, ha ha ha. And he doesn't laugh. He's cold and calculating, so they can't beat him at cold and calculating. So Beast Boy pulls a Terry McGinnis. He starts laughing and being like, you are being thwarted by five teenagers. Like, is that not annoying? And Slade loses his cool and his advantage,
right?
You know, like, and then eventually he pins Beast Boy down and he's like, keep laughing, see what happens. And then Terra comes through to save the day.
Okay,
that's really dope.
That's great. That is actually,
oh my goodness,
conceptually super important.
Yeah. And then the denouement of Terra riding off into the sunset in her van.
Yep.
In her Volkswagen
van life
van. And
do we want a teaser trailer
for the third? Since we have no plan for doing a third, yes.
Okay, great.
Because we teased Thanos back in like 2010, and
no,
we didn't
plan.
See him until like 2016.
Huh.
I mean, so many teasers and things just either don't have anything to do with anything. If you aren't planning, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So much of them go to waste, and no one really minds when that happens.
No, yeah.
So sure.
All right. Cool.
Who is our third movie about? Our third Teen Titans movie? Who would that be about? And just to be clear, next week's episode will not be Teen Titans Part 3.
No. We will arbitrarily pick it up, so you gotta keep paying attention forever. I don't know. I feel like it's either about Cyborg or Starfire, because we would want to conclude...
Yes.
Yes.
Definitely. Raven is last.
Yeah. So I think that it kind of depends. Do we want to just get progressively bigger? Because I think Starfire's going into space sort of presents an opportunity for more escalation. But if you want to change, like, kind of pivot and change tone, then going Starfire, then Cyborg.
To make it as pitchable as possible, we should go Cyborg, Starfire, Raven for the sake of emotional one-on-one personal drama, escalating past Earth into space, and then escalating past space into literally Trigon will destroy existence as we know it.
Yeah.
All interdimensional.
Totally. Whatever, okay, then I think that then if we're kind of escalating, then I think that there is... there's a specific thing that can be done.
Uh-huh.
Is that, like, Cyborg, we've got everybody comes home in, like, you know, a shell of Titan's Tower because they got to build it again because it got destroyed.
Oh, that's right.
You
can go from not living in Titan's Tower to not living in a mansion.
Right, yeah. But Cyborg gets back, or he's, like, in his temporary accommodations or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
You have, like, that... Nick Fury type teaser at the end of Iron Man, but it's like, it's John Jones, it's someone from the Justice League.
Oh, yo!
It's like, we've got a promising future.
Ooh, that would be really cool.
Right.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that would be dope. Someone, yeah, and like, we can wait and see. I do dig, really, really dig John Jones.
He's great, and kind of, It's disappointingly not used at all yet in those DC movies. Whack. But also he lends himself much better to animation. DC, definitely. Give us money. pay us $100,000 a piece to write these movies. Each movie.
Oh, man.
We'll do it for 60 and 2 points in the back end.
Yeah. Bro, I'll do it for 60K.
Don't tell
flat.
Them. You're weakening. Well, the thing is,
I'm not going to write it. I'll do story buy for 50K easy. Then, like, you know, if I work like 10-hour work weeks.
All right, let's edit this out.
No. Okay, no. I want to be able to know. Like, a certain amount of work, I'll do for free. And when I say free, I mean being respected. And so at a point, if you're like, hey, come in, you'll do it for free, right? I'm like, since I did not say that first, no. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, I, basically, I just want to be very upfront with my expectations and desires and such.
I have no idea why, but everything you just said made me want a grapefruit.
See, just like that, being very upfront and frank about your desires.
Yes.
Go get that grapefruit.
That's our religion now.
Yes.
Okay. I dare say that this story and several other unrelated things have been tapped.
I agree. The end.
The end.
Thanks for listening to this episode of StoryTap. If you enjoyed, make sure to leave a review on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And follow us on Twitter @StoryTapPodcast. It helps a ton. And thanks again.